the Book of Judges. It's a tale of chaos unleashed, of violence unchained, and of a moral compass spinning wildly out of control. Ancient Israel's story? Perhaps. But as we peel back the pages, we'll find a mirror reflecting our own tumultuous times. Everyone did what was right in their own eyes. Sound familiar? Well, join us over the next few weeks as we study the Book of Judges, ancient wisdom for modern chaos. Our story begins now.
So Judges chapter 14 and 15. Samson went down to Timnah and saw there a young Philistine woman. When he returned, he said to his father and mother, "I've seen a Philistine woman in Timnah. Now get her for me as my wife." His father and mother replied, "Isn't there an acceptable woman among your relatives or among all our people? Must you go to the uncircumcised Philistines to get a wife?" But Samson said to his father, "Get her for me. She's the right one for me." His parents did not know that this was from the Lord, who was seeking an occasion to confront the Philistines. For that time, they were ruling over Israel. Samson went down to Timnah together with his father and mother. As he approached the vineyards of Timnah, suddenly a young lion came roaring towards them. The Spirit of the Lord came powerfully upon him so that he tore the lion apart with his bare hands, as he might have torn a young goat. But he told neither his mother, father or his mother what he had done. Then he went down and talked with the woman, and he liked her. Sometime later, when he went back to marry her, he turned aside to look at the lion's carcass, and in it he saw a swarm of bees and some honey. He scooped out the honey with his hands and ate as he went along. When he rejoined his parents, he gave them some, and they too ate it. But he did not tell them that he had taken the honey from the lion's carcass. Now his father went down to see the woman, and there Samson held a feast, as was customary for young men. When the people saw him, they chose 30 men to be his companions. "Let me tell you a riddle," Samson said to them. "If you can give me the answer within the 7 days of the feast, I will give you 30 linen garments and 30 sets of clothes. If you can't tell me the answer, you must give me 30 linen garments and 30 sets of clothes." "Tell us your riddle," they said. "Let's hear it." He replied, "Out of the eater, something to eat. Out of the strong, something sweet." For 3 days, they could not give the answer. On the fourth day, they said to Samson's wife, "Coax your husband into explaining the riddle for us, or we will burn you and your father's household to death. Did you invite us here to steal our property?" Then Samson's wife threw herself on him, sobbing, "You hate me! You don't really love me! You've given my people a riddle, but you haven't told me the answer." "I haven't even explained it to my father or mother," he replied, "so why should I explain it to you?" She cried the whole 7 days of the feast. So on the seventh day, he finally told her, because she continued to press him. She in turn explained the riddle to her people. Before sunset on the seventh day, the men of the town said to him, "What is sweeter than honey? What is stronger than a lion?" Samson said to them, "If you had not ploughed with my heifer, you would not have solved my riddle." Then the Spirit of the Lord came powerfully upon him. He went down to Ashkelon, struck down 30 of their men, stripped them of everything, and gave their clothes to those who had explained the riddle. Burning with anger, he returned to his father's home, and Samson's wife was given to one of his companions who had attended him at the feast. Later on, at the time of wheat harvest, Samson took a young goat and went to visit his wife. He said, "I'm going to my wife's room." But her father would not let him go in. "I was so sure you hated her," he said, "that I gave her to your companion. Isn't her younger sister more attractive? Take her instead." Samson said to them, "This time I have a right to get even with the Philistines. I will really harm them." So he went out and caught 300 foxes and tied them tail to tail in pairs. He then fastened a torch to every pair of tails, lit the torches, and let the foxes loose in the standing corn of the Philistines. He burned up the shocks and standing corn together with the vineyards and olive groves. When the Philistines asked, "Who did this?" they were told, Samson, the Timnite's son-in-law, because his wife was given to his companion. So the Philistines went up and burned her and her father to death. Samson said to them, "Since you've acted like this, I swear I won't stop until I get my revenge on you." He attacked them viciously and slaughtered many of them. Then he went down and stayed in a cave in the rock of Etam. The Philistines went up and camped in Judah, spreading out near Lehi. The people of Judah asked, "Why have you come to fight us?" "We've come to take Samson prisoner," they answered, "to do to him as he did to us." Then 3,000 men from Judah went down to the cave in the rock of Etam and said to Samson, "Don't you realize that the Philistines are rulers over us? What have you done to us?" He answered, "I merely did to them what they did to me." They said to him, "We've come to tie you up and hand you over to the Philistines." Samson said, "Swear to me that you won't kill me yourselves." "Agreed," they answered, "we will only tie you up and hand you over to them. We will not kill you." So they bound him with two new ropes and led him up from the rock. As he approached Lehi, the Philistines came towards him shouting. The Spirit of the Lord came powerfully upon him. The ropes in his arms became like charred flax, and the bindings dropped from his hands. Finding a fresh jawbone of a donkey, he grabbed it and struck down 1,000 men. Then Samson said, "With a donkey's jawbone, I have made donkeys of them. With a donkey's jawbone, I have killed 1,000 men." When he finished speaking, he threw away the jawbone, and the place was called Ramath Lehi. Because he was very thirsty, he cried out to the Lord, "You have given your servant this great victory. Must I now die of thirst and fall into the hands of the uncircumcised?" Then Samson opened up the hollow place in Lehi, and water came out of it. When Samson drank, his strength returned and he revived. So the spring was called En Hachor, and it is still there in Lehi. Samson led Israel for 20 years in the days of the Philistines. I wonder if you've ever been like me before. Have you ever walked in to the middle of a movie and felt completely confused? I mean, being the dad of little girls, I often walk into the house when the TV is on. Maybe it's Frozen, maybe it's Encanto, midway through, and I have no idea what's going on in the movie. Without seeing the beginning, the motivations of the people involved are a mystery, aren't they? And without seeing the ending, you don't know where everything's meant to be going. Actually, I think that's exactly what life feels like sometimes, doesn't it? We're dropped into the middle of a story that perhaps we don't fully understand. Judges 14 and 15, Samson is living exactly that way. Samson's living, isn't he, by only seeing what is right in front of him, missing the bigger picture. But behind all the chaos and all the confusion, God is directing the story with a purpose that Samson cannot imagine. So how can we trust God when everything looks a mess? See, when mess, when stress, when pressure comes, they say that's when our true character emerges. And that's often the problem, isn't it? When life becomes messy, what's your first instinct? I mean, we have options, don't we? Perhaps we hunker down and we hide. We try and escape from everything around us. Or maybe we take matters into our own hands. If no one else is going to deal with it, I will. Maybe we follow Frank Sinatra's advice, the number one funeral song, sadly. I did it my way. And the thing is, it wouldn't be wrong, would it, to say our world is a messy place. Internationally, nationally, locally, personally. Many of us here tonight are facing decisions about the future that seem unclear. Some of us here are navigating difficulties that seem impossible. Others here are praying, and the silence is deafening. Each one of those responses is a problem. It's the same thing here. Samson thinks he's the author of his own adventure, and it ends up getting messy and destructive, doesn't it? Judges 14 and 15 are here to show us that living by sight alone always leads to compromise, always leads to destruction, always leads to chaos. But these chapters are also teaching us something really important, that we can trust that God is working his plan out, even if we can't see it. I mean, that's Samson's story in a nutshell. He thought he was writing his own adventure, but God is the true author all along. Samson sees only what's right in front of his eyes, whilst God sees the beginning to the end. Just think about it for a moment. If you were to look back at what you'd say is the most chaotic season of your life, by the broken relationship, the career setback, the unanswered prayer, how often have you then later recognised God's fingerprints? Let's see how these chapters get us there, shall we? See, the first step in trusting God when things look messy is to recognise our own limited vision. Because living by our eyes leads us away from God. Verses 1 to 4. You see, the boy we met last week has done his growing up. Do you remember Samson? He was set apart to be a Nazarite from his birth, or actually from his conception. He was dedicated to God. He had special vows to avoid certain things. And now we meet him, chapter 14, verse 1, and he's ready to marry. Samson went down to Timnah and saw there a young Philistine woman. When he returned to his father and mother, he said, "I have seen a Philistine woman in Timnah. Now get her for me as my wife." I mean, that should ring alarm bells, shouldn't it? Firstly, because in the book of Judges, God's people should not be marrying people from the people around. When you bring a wife home, you bring their world with you. Their gods, their idols, their customs. Samson's birth story we saw last week is echoing the story of Isaac in Genesis. But his marriage here, it's echoing more Esau's story than Isaac's. And Timnah is famous for only one thing. It's where Isaac's grandson Judah met a prostitute. There you go. Second reason it should ring alarm bells. Let me just pick out these words for us. Notice the pattern. Samson went and saw. He says, "I have seen a woman. Now get her for me." Saw, seen, get. So remind you of any other Bible stories, major Bible stories. When someone sees something that is good and then takes it. It's the same words here. Takes us right back to Genesis chapter 3, doesn't it? Eve saw the fruit. It was pleasing to the eye, so she took it. It's the same story playing out again with Samson. But fortunately, his parents, they know the issue, so they try and persuade him to go for the local girl. But Samson doubles down, verse 3, "Get her for me, she's the right one for me." Or more literally, "She's right in my eyes." You see how Samson here is living by his eyes, and it is taking him away from God's. That's exactly what happens when we make decisions based purely on what we see in a moment. When we're facing a relationship decision, and we're choosing what looks good rather than what aligns with God's word. When we're praying about something and we don't see God moving, so, I'll just take it into my own hands. Samson, as far as he's concerned, knows what he wants and takes what he wants. It's a mess, isn't it? But notice verse 4. See, verse 4 underwrites the whole Samson story. Look here with me, verse 4. His parents did not know that this was from the Lord, who was seeking an occasion to confront the Philistines. For at that time, they were ruling over Israel. Samson is acting like a brute, but behind the scenes, he is part of God's larger plan. And we shortly see that this relationship is what brings about the fight with the Philistines. But it leaves us with this, doesn't it? Our compromise often begins when we respond to what we see over listening to God's words. We follow what looks good rather than what God says is actually good. That is the story of Samson. That is the story of Israel actually in Judges, isn't it? They followed their own sight and they forgot about God. And as we've already seen, that's the story of humanity in general. Just like Genesis 3, which we'll see again in a moment. When our eyes take control of our heads, when we forget everything else and get sucked up into the present, when we forget God's goodness, his grace in the past, the future he has before us, and we put self-imposed blinkers on. So the first way we learn to trust God in the mess is by acknowledging the limits of what we can see. When we only trust our eyes, like Samson, we miss God's larger perspective. And we create even more chaos. And that leads us to our second point. And that is, following our own vision creates even bigger problems. See, when we solve things ourselves, they end up spiralling, don't they? Bigger and bigger. And that's what's happening all the way from verse 5 all the way down to Judges 15, verse 17. So what happens? Well, Samson and his parents, they go down to Timnah. Samson goes through a vineyard. That's the place where grapes grow. Do you remember that? And all of a sudden, life throws him a curveball. Suddenly a lion appears. I mean, that's not meant to be normal. But again, the Spirit of the Lord comes powerfully on Samson and he tears the lion apart, just like you might tear a young goat. I mean, wait, you what? Just imagine that. How do you make sense of that? Oh, well, let's carry on. He doesn't tell his parents a thing about it. They carry on down to Timnah, where he then talks to the woman for the first time and he likes her. Good dating strategy there. A little while later, Samson goes back to marry her, or literally to take, is the word there, his wife. And Samson sees the lion that he tore. And inside it is another surprise. There's some bees and some honey. Wait, what? Where's that come from? Anyway, he sees, he takes, and he gives that honey to his parents. Does that sound familiar? Sees, takes, gives to someone else? Well, his parents, unlike Adam in Genesis 3, are completely innocent. So Samson's worse than Eve. Do you see that? Well, they carry on their way, and Samson then holds the feast, and he poses the riddle, verse 14. Out of the eater, something to eat. Out of the strong, something sweet. You could read so many books on this riddle I have over the week. The point of this riddle is, it is unsolvable. Without being there, you'd have no idea what the answer is. That is the point. Samson goes, I've got this in the bag. He sees himself as a strong man. I've got 30 new suits guaranteed. Sort it. But the Philistines, well, they're not to be trifled with. So they resort to shady tactics. Verse 15. They go to his wife, coax your husband into explaining the riddle for us, or we will burn you and your father's household to the ground. Well, it's like the bad wolf, isn't it, with the three little pigs. Well, Samson then pulls on his heartstrings, which, if you know anything of Samson, that's his weak point. And he caves. He tells her, she tells them. They solve the riddle. And then begins this escalating cycle of vengeance. Just watch how it spirals out of control. The spirit empowers Samson, like he did a lion. He kills 30 men. He takes their clothes to pay his debt. He storms off in anger. Verse 15, he comes back. He wants to see his wife, but finds out she's been given away. It's another parody of a Genesis story there, the younger sister being offered. But Samson only sees red, and he wants vengeance, so he catches 300 foxes. And in a Gideon sort of way, he gives them torches. Then he sets fire to the Philistine fields. So they return the favor, and they burn Samson's wife and father. So verse 7, he swears revenge. He slaughters them. Do you see the pattern? Personal desire, deception, betrayal, murder, vengeance, violence. It's like when we decide to handle that problem on our own without consulting God, and suddenly we're in 10 steps deeper than we ever imagined. Actually, that's what's happening here. Do you see the numbers? 30 men killed in anger. 300 foxes sent out to burn the fields. Verse 11. Then 3,000 men from Judah went down to the cave and said to Samson, do you realize the Philistines are rulers over us? What have you done? He answered, I merely did to them what they did to me. I mean, 3,000 men, that's a lot of people, isn't it? They come to Samson and they show they're compromised. Don't you realize the Philistines, they're rulers over us? Just keep our lives simple, Samson. Stop delivering us, Samson. Just leave us alone, Samson. People of Israel prefer oppression to deliverance. They've accepted what God never intended to be normal. And Samson's defense comes out the child's scoreboard, doesn't it? They did it to me. The point here is Samson is acting like a Philistine. And the point here is Judah want to be Philistines. It's compromise central right here in Timnah. And so what do the men of Judah do? Well, they bind Samson up. Just notice the irony there. They bind Samson up. They take him to the Philistines. But then shock, surprise, the Spirit of the Lord comes powerfully on Samson again and he strikes down another 1,000 Philistines. It's chaos, isn't it? Back and forth, back and forth. It's like a fox tied to another fox with a torch between its tails, just running all over the place, zigzag. And that's the way it is, isn't it? When we try and handle mess ourselves, we just create more mess. See, trusting God means we let go of our need to fix everything on the way. But the great news tonight is it's not just blind trust. It's trust in something that is visible. Which brings us to the third thing this evening. The third thing is the most powerful way we trust God in the mess is to remember God's track records. See, despite all appearances, God's vision succeeds despite our blindness. That's what we see in these last verses, 18 to 20. Remember the subtle drumbeat beneath this whole chaotic story? It's that God is at work. Remember Judges 4, verse 14, verse 4? His parents did not know this was from the Lord who was seeking an occasion to confront the Philistines. I mean, there's been a confrontation with the Philistines, hasn't there? Why now? The oppression is being dealt with. It's just not happening in a very pretty way. I mean, the Spirit of the Lord is coming powerfully on Samson, but not because Samson wants to deliver the people. It's actually in spite of Samson. Do you remember, Samson's meant to be a Nazarite. It's meant to be set apart. No grapes, no unclean food, and no razor on his head. Did you spot how that went through this passage? Let me show you. Firstly, he met that lion. Just remember that lion that Sam to be out. Do you see where he met the lion? Chapter 14, verse 5. He met the lion in a vineyard. In a vineyard. The one place a Nazarite probably should never go. And then he held a feast, verse 10. Well, that's the NIV's way of being polite. It's actually a drinking fest. It's the word there. Strike one. Then there was the lion itself, wasn't there? I mean, first of all, it's dead. That's what happens when you tear a lion apart. But then the honey. The honey was in contact with a dead animal, so it is unclean, according to the Bible's rules. And as you notice, chapter 15, verse 15, he's attacking the Philistines. What does he use? A fresh jawbone from a donkey. Not an old one, a fresh one. Emphasis on the fresh, it's just died. Strike two. His brazen actions show Samson couldn't care less about God. But where did that lion come from? Where did those bees come from? Who is doing all this? Well, God's involved, isn't he? We see Samson's brazen rejection, but God's grace. And we see it all together in verse 18. Have a look at verse 18. Because he was very thirsty, he cried out to the Lord, "You have given your servant this great victory. Must I now die of thirst and fall into the hands of the uncircumcised?" Does that self-centeredness remind you of anyone in the book of Judges? It's the nation of Israel, isn't it? It's another groan of discomfort. Look at what I've done, and now I'm thirsty. Come on, God, do something about it. Self-centered. It's assuming. Well, the language there is meant to remind us of Moses, actually. The servant who won a great victory and then needed water in the wilderness. But just like all the other parodies in the story of Samson, well, Samson botches this one as well. God splits the rock, water from the rock. So Samson names it after himself. He narcissist or what, eh? Yet it highlights God's grace to the undeserving. To Samson, who is a picture of Israel. Israel, who are just like us. That is the wonder of our God. Even when we take matters into our own hands, even when our prayers are self-serving, even when we've made a complete mess of things, God is still at work. And so verse 20, the finale. Samson led Israel for 20 years in the days of the Philistines. You see there, the author states he actually led, he actually judged Israel, although in the days of the Philistines. God's purpose is accomplished through a deeply flawed judge. The deliverer that God had used, but not the deliverer they deserved. See, God's purposes are shown to succeed despite failure. That is the bedrock of how you trust God when everything looks like a mess. Not because we have perfect faith, but because we serve a God who consistently shows he works through chaos to accomplish his good purposes. So what do we take from these couple of chapters? When things look messy, relationship difficulties, impossible decisions, unanswered prayers, everything feeling like an unsolvable riddle, when, like Samson, we're tempted to do what's right in our own eyes, our own relationships, our own vengeance, our own decisions, everything without God. I mean, when life is a riddle, remember the Philistines, impossible riddle, out of the eater something to eat, out of the strong something sweet. Without being there, you'd have never solved it. That is life without God's perspective, isn't it? These chapters are inviting us to look beyond what our eyes can see, to see life through God's eyes, not just your own. See, in the chaos of life, we don't just need better vision, we need a better perspective, God's perspective. Even when we can't see God at work, he is accomplishing his purposes. And that means we don't need to settle for compromise like Samson did, like Israel did. We can trust God's perspective over our own. Even when we can't see how, we can trust that God's way is right. God's way is best. Because the truth is, our chaos doesn't stop God's plan. It often becomes the very means by which God works. Let me ask you three questions to think about this evening. Maybe you want to talk about these on the tables in a minute. Firstly, where are you trusting your eyes over God's word? Is it that relationship where emotions are drowning out God's wisdom? That decision where convenience feels more compelling to you than obedience? And secondly, what situation are you in right now that feels chaotic? Might be job uncertainty, health challenges, family conflicts. Could God be using that for something you can't see yet? Thirdly, how might God be using your mistakes for his purposes? Remember, Samson's failings didn't stop God's plan. They became part of it. Big overall question, what area of your life needs to move from your sight to God's sovereignty today? Because Judges reminds us that life isn't about perfect vision. It's about trusting the one who sees perfectly. Spoiler, Samson's going to lose his eyes completely in the next chapter. We don't have to wait for such drastic measures, because we can look beyond what our eyes can see, beyond the riddle of our circumstance, and trust that God is working out his plan. Which means the response is never, God, where are you in this mess? The response is, God, open my eyes to see where you've been all along. When everything looks a mess, we don't need better eyesight, we need God's insight. That's how you trust God when everything looks a mess. Should we go to tables and pray? Let's pray that God would open our eyes to that. Let's discuss, pray, and I'll pause that together in a few minutes.
Thank you for listening to the podcast. Any questions can be sent to podcast@david-couch.com. I'll see you again next time.